out will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
Season 5, Episode 5 of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Redcon One, Florida Alternative Medicine, and Old School Labs. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I'm your host, John Hansen, and we are talking on Season 5 about the NABBA Mr. Universe. And the NABBA Mr. Universe, of course, was a legendary competition that started in 1950 over in London, England, and it still runs today. So it has gone on. It's one of the longest running contests in the bodybuilding world. But the years that we're talking about was the golden era of the NABBA universe. And that was in the 1960s, 1970s, when such legendary bodybuilders as Steve Reeves and Bill Pearl and Reg Park, and then Arnold Schwarzenegger and Frank Zane and Chris Dickerson and Boyer Coe and Serge Noubre, Bertel Fox had many, many, many champions. So we're talking to some of those winners from those competitions in this season of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we're also talking to some historians of the sport about some of the bodybuilders who have won that competition. And we started off season 5 talking with Wayne Galash. We had a 2-part interview where we were talking about all the winners from the NABBA universe, or most of them at least. I think we still have to do another interview with Wayne to get us more up to date. And then we talked to Boyer Coe, one of my favorite interviews. Boyer is one of the best pro bodybuilders in the 1960s and 1970s and 1980s. So we had a great conversation with him in episode number 3. Last week, we talked to John Citrone, and John Citrone is a real legend in the sport. He's about 75 years old now, and he started bodybuilding back in the 1960s, and he actually competed with Arnold Schwarzenegger at Arnold's very first NABBA Universe in 1966. We had a great conversation with John because then he came back as a master's competitor. He competed in his 50s, and I think he stopped competing around the age of 63. And like I said, John is now about 75. So that was last week's episode. We got some great feedback from that. And this week, we are going to be talking to John Torelli. And John Torelli was one of Australia's best bodybuilders. John competed in the 1980s as well. I remember him competing against Lee Haney at the 1983 Las Vegas Pro. That was the first time I saw John. He took second place in that contest, beating out many of the top IFBB pros at that time. And I was like, wow, who's this guy? Came out of nowhere and he took second place. And then John competed throughout the 1980s. But relating to our season 5 of the NABBA Universe, John won the NABBA Universe in 1994. That was his last competition. He won the NABBA Pro Universe. And he also competed in 1982 when he won his class and John Brown won the overall. So we're going to have a great conversation today with John Torelli about his long career, including talking about the 1980 Mr. Olympia, because John was, of course, at that contest. It was in Sydney, Australia, where John is from. And John was competing in a contest, I think it was called the Best of Australia. And he was only 21 years old, and he was actually natural at the time, was not taking any steroids. And John won that contest. So he, of course, stuck around for the contest and watched the 1980 Mr. Olympia. So I've got some great conversation with John about that contest as well. So that'll be coming up in a minute. And as I mentioned, we were brought to you by Redcon One. At Redcon One, everybody wants to be a champion and everyone wants to be the best. And at Redcon One, they believe in working hard to achieve your goals. Whether you're killing it in the gym or running a 6-minute mile, Redcon One has something for those willing to put in the work. Their premier clinically dosed pre-workout called Total War is the perfect companion to your workout to give you that extra push to break through your mental and physical barriers. And then you can fuel your body after those workouts with the revolutionary MRE. It is the only whole food complete meal replacement with protein coming from salmon, chicken, beef, and eggs, and carbs coming from sweet potatoes and oats. And it also contains 10 grams of fat from MCT oil. This is the best tasting complete meal you will ever have. So go to redcon1.com and try the very best that sports nutrition has to offer. Redcon One, the highest state of readiness. And because you are listening to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, you can enter the discount code LEGENDS and get 15% discount off your order. And as I've been mentioning this month, They are having a transformation contest with Redcon One for 2018, and they are offering a $10,000 first place prize. So if you want to enter that contest, go to redcon1.com. I believe it ends this coming week on January 31st. So be sure to get in that contest and put your before pictures up so you can win that $10,000 prize. We're also brought to you by Old School Labs. I have been with Old School Labs for several years now. They are the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements to the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. They're the brand that I used to win the Masters Natural Mr. Universe contest in 2012. And they're also the company that sponsors Breon Ansley, who is the new 2017 Classic Physique Olympia champion. They're also sponsoring Sergio Oliva Jr., one of the hottest pros on the circuit right now. And they just took on Samir Benoit, 1983 Mr. Olympia, and one of the most symmetrical and classic physiques ever. So go to oldschoollabs.com, and then you can use the discount code LEGENDS12, and you'll get 12% off your order with Old School Labs. You really want to try out their protein powder called Vintage Brawn, B-R-A-W-N. It's a great protein powder that uses whole food sources of protein, such as milk, meat, and eggs. So check that out. I've been using that for the last couple months. I love it. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right, we've been racking up the interviews here at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast just in the last week. In addition to John Torelli, I also got a chance to talk to Lance Dreher, and Lance was a guy that I grew up in Chicago watching because he was a few years older than me. Lance was the guy. He was the man out in Chicago, and everybody thought that Lance was going to go all the way and win the Mr. America, Mr. Universe, and maybe even the Mr. Olympia because he had that kind of physique. He had kind of an Arnold physique with huge arms. And as we said in our interview with Lance, he had that jawline like Arnold. So a lot of people thought that Lance was going to go all the way. And he did end up winning the Mr. America in the heavyweight class in 1981. And then he went over to the IFBB Mr. Universe, the World Championships in Cairo, Egypt. And he won the heavyweight class there, beating out Gunnar Rosbo from Norway. If you remember Gunnar, he had those huge forearms. Lance also went on to compete in the NAVA Universe, and he had some really good success over there. So we talked to Lance Dreher this last week. So that interview will be coming up in a couple of weeks. And I also did a really good interview with John Brown. And John is also a NAVA Mr. Universe a few times. And he was also a big influence in the careers of Sean Ray and Melvin Anthony and Vince Taylor. He helped those guys get into bodybuilding, trained them from ground zero, and showed them how to develop their physiques and also how to do some great posing routines. And of course, all three of those gentlemen are awesome posers, some of the best posers ever in the bodybuilding world, in the bodybuilding history. John's got a great story, and he really talks about the mental approach to training, and that was a really interesting part of the interview. And three of his sons now, he has three sons, and they are all being considered for the NFL. In fact, the HBO sports show, Real Sport, which is a great show if you've ever seen it on HBO, Brian Gumble is the host. And they do sort of like a 60 minutes type of show where they have about three or four different stories on each episode. And it's on every month on HBO. And they have great reporters, great investigative reporting, some really, really great interviews on there. So check that out. Well, John and his three sons are going to be on HBO this week. I think it's January 30th it airs. So check that out on HBO. And all three of his sons are phenomenal athletes. They're all being considered for the NFL draft. And they also scored very, very high on their SAT scores, and they all speak three languages. So he's really raised some great kids, and I can't wait to see this show this week because I'm a big fan of Real Sports. So it's great that bodybuilding is going to get some recognition, and John Brown and the work that he's done with his sons is going to be one of the stories on this week's episode of Real Sports. So be sure to check that out if you're a fan of the show like I am. And we also should have some other good interviews coming up pretty soon. Roy Duvall, who was 1979 IFBB Mr. Universe in the middleweight class, he also had a long history with NAVA. So we might be talking to Roy pretty soon. And Cy Sweeney, who is a guy I met on Facebook. Cy has a big history of the NAVA universe. He has been hooking me up with some of these other people. So hopefully we'll be able to talk to some of them. Also, Ian Lawrence and Eddie Elwood. Eddie Elwood was a more recent winner of the NAVA universe. But Eddie won the NAVA Universe five times in a row, which I believe was the record. So we're going to hopefully talk to some of these guys. And also I want to talk again to Peter McGough, because Peter McGough used to live in England, of course, and he went to see the NABBA Universe every year. So I'm sure he's got some great stories from that contest. All right. I also want to mention we're brought to you by Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but are comfortable knowing also they're there for you every step of the way. They offer very competitive pricing along with their quality products and services. So those are just a few additional reasons to give them a call at their office at 813-922-8939. And if you want to check them out online, go to flalternativemeds.com. That's their website, flalternativemeds.com. Or if you want to call them, again, the number is 813-922-8939. And they are located in Tampa, Florida. And they have a brand new office out here. But they will work with anybody in the United States. So just give them a call or visit their website and mention the Bodybuilding Legends Show, and you will get a free consultation, and that is about a $100 offer. So just mention the Bodybuilding Legends podcast and use the promotion code LEGEND, and you'll get a free consultation, plus you'll get 20% off any packages they order. So check them out. All right, this was a crazy weekend out here in Tampa, Florida, where I'm from. They had the Gasparilla Parade this weekend. And I am on my diet, so I skipped the Gasparilla Parade this year. It's always a fun event, though. It's one of the biggest parades, I think, in the country. So I was out at a personal training certification program, I should say, put out by the company that I'm doing the One World Conference for in March. And that's the AAAI-ISSAFitness.com. So if you go to that website, you can check that out. But I am going to the One World Conference, which is going to be held on March 2nd through 4th out in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to be doing three seminars out there on the secrets of natural bodybuilding. So I'm looking forward to attending their conference. This will be the first time I'm going out there. And I'm going to be attending some other conferences that they're going to be having this year in Atlantic City and Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and in Baltimore. So that's going to be coming up for the rest of the year. So I was out there instead of going to the Gasparilla Parade, but I'm sure it was a great event for all those people that attended every year. It's always a wild time. Hope you guys are following your diet and reaching your goals this year. We're already at the end of January. My waist is down almost 2 inches from when I started. So I'm right on time. I should be in top shape by the end of May, early June. I'm planning on doing some photo shoots. And like I said, I want to go out to California to see the Muscle Beach Hall of Fame, which will be on Memorial Day weekend because Phil Williams is going to be inducted in there. Got to keep working for our goals as we head through the year. Take it one day at a time, 1 week at a time, and that's how you make progress. I also have an offer on my books. I just wrote a new ebook. It's called Training Methods for Gaining Size, and I'm giving it away for free for anybody who purchases my two new bodybuilding books, which is Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends Volume 1 and also the MP6 Workout. So if you guys are interested in that, send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com and you can get this brand new ebook I just wrote called Training Methods for Gaining Size. You'll get that for free if you purchase the two new books. And if you want the ebook, just send me an email anyways. If you already bought my books, just again, write to me at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I'll show you how to get that free new ebook that I just wrote. All right. So we are all set for our interview with John Torelli, one of the best bodybuilders from Australia. And here you go. Enjoy the interview. All right. Welcome to the Bodybuilding Legends Show. And I have a very special guest this week. It's John Torelli calling in from Australia. How you doing, John?
Good, John. How are you?
Good. I enjoyed watching you compete in the 1980s, John. And so it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much. I had a great time doing it too, John.
So, John, tell me a little bit about how you got started in bodybuilding. The first show I can remember you doing, I think, was 1983, that show in Las Vegas when you competed against Lee Haney and took second. And I was like, wow, who's this new guy? But how did you get started in bodybuilding? What age were you and where did you grow up? That kind of thing.
Okay, well, I was born in Italy, and I came to Australia when I was 7 years of age.
Okay.
And lived in Sydney, one day I was in a barber shop waiting to get my hair cut, and I opened up a comic book and saw the Charles Atlas.
Oh, yeah.
Where the bully kicked the sand in somebody's face. It was very interesting, but it was a cartoon, right? So I didn't really know whether anything like that really existed or what it was.
Yeah.
Then I came along a photo of a guy holding a sword over his head, and it was Steve Reeves. Now, this guy was real. There was a real photo of him, and I said, and I was transfixed. I looked at it and I said, my God, how can anybody look like this? And what do you even to even what would you need to even do to begin to look like this? And it was from then on, I was transfixed with it. And, you know, even watching the Hercules movies with Steve Reeves, I didn't connect that it was the same guy in the back of the comic holding a sword over his head. So that sparked it all. And from there, I had to find my way.
What year was that, John? That you saw that picture of Steve Reeves?
I think I would have probably been about 11 or 12 years of age.
Okay. What year were you born, John?
1959.
Okay. So how did you get involved then in actually lifting weights and deciding to be a bodybuilder?
Well, I knew that I needed to exercise because I was aware that I was not in good shape and you know, at 9 years of age, I already started questioning the food that I was eating. And
oh, really?
So, you know, every time my mother would cook something, I'd ask her, well, is this fattening, Mum? And she'd go, no, it's good for you. And, you know, so I had to start finding my own way and experimenting and trying stuff. So that's how it all started. Then one day I kept thinking about, how do I start exercising? I just happened to be watching an American war film where all the soldiers were lined up doing calisthenics. So when I saw that, I said, okay, well, that would be a good start. Why don't you start doing this
in my lounge room?
So from there, I remember going to a newsstand again with my mother. I was very young. We were shopping and I saw an Iron Man magazine. And I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And I think it may have even had Chris Dickinson on the cover.
Okay.
Yeah, or Ralph Groker.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they were the two first bodybuilding magazines. And, you know, the Ralph Groker one, yeah, that was pretty good. He was standing on the cover with his two daughters. But then when they had the one of Chris Dickinson about a month later or a couple of months later, he looked like a statue, and I couldn't work it out. I looked at it, and I said, look at this.
Yeah.
You know, like, how do you do this?
Yeah.
So, you know, I bought the magazine, and I remember looking through it and seeing a program written out. There was no photo, but it simply had a chest program that went something like 4 times 12 bench. So when I looked at this, I said, What's the numbers? What's 4 times 12? What is this? Nobody explained what sets and reps were.
Right.
So I thought, this is called the bench press. So apparently you've got to press a bench. That's what I thought. So I started pressing the coffee table instead.
Oh, really?
Then somewhere I read that it was called the prone bench press. I said, oh, well, you're doing this wrong. You've got to do it laying down.
Yeah.
So that's how it all started, John.
Wow.
You know, doing calisthenics in my lounge room. In actual fact, from looking through Iron Man and seeing the various different things that you're seeing there, like it was powerlifters and there was Olympic lifters and bodybuilders, I wasn't sure what sort of training protocol I needed to do. And believe it or not, what I came up with was racing from one piece of equipment to another in my lounge room after my parents went to work in the morning before I went to school, and it was pretty much a CrossFit workout because I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
So you could imagine my surprise 40 years later when they've actually turned this into a sport
right.
and training program. I used to do that when I didn't know what I was doing.
Right. How old were you then when you were doing all this?
12.
12, okay.
So then when I got a little bit better at understanding what the magazines were all about and you know, I started getting the weirder magazines. Mm-hmm. I understood a little bit more, but, John, because of how I started training and I didn't understand what sets and reps were, I trained by time.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, one of the first tools that I did, there was a stick that my mother had with some fabric wrapped around it. When the fabric finished, I got that stick, nailed it together in a manner where it was like a little bar, put a brick on each end, and started lifting that. I then progressed to a steel pipe with bricks tied on the end of it. Then there was an article in Iron Man on how to make your own plate, and I progressed to that. But in the beginning, John, because I didn't understand sets and reps, the way I would train is, let's say today I've got this weight and I can curl it for 60 seconds. I knew that if by the end of the week I could curl it for 90 seconds, I had improved.
Right.
Right. That, so that was my training. Like, I remember doing squats for 5 minutes straight.
Wow.
I didn't understand what sets and reps were. I just thought, look,
yeah.
The first time I did this, I had 40 pounds on the bar or a steel bar with two bricks on each end.
Right.
And, I said, today I squatted it for a minute. Tomorrow I'll beat my record and I'll go for a minute and a half until I work my way up to 5 minutes.
Right, right.
So until I actually learned the science of sets and reps and how it was all done, that's how I trained.
And progressive resistance, too. You were making it progressively harder.
Yeah, well, time under tension also.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So when did you decide to start competing then, John?
Well, again, you know, the Weirder magazines were glossy and, you know, they showed a lot of stuff and it all looked like this incredible world.
Yeah.
I kept looking through Iron Man magazines and I kept watching guys like Doug Beaver,
mm-hmm.
Willie Johnson, who kept winning Best Back in
Mr.
US, and Mike Dayton, all these guys, Bob Gallucci. And I'm looking at these guys and I'm going, okay, well, this could be a better entry level to aim for than what they've got in the Weirder magazines.
Yeah.
So it all started like that, looking at these guys. And I got to the stage where I said, well, look, they've done another contest and yet another contest, and I've still done nothing.
Yeah.
And I think I was 16 years of age, and I decided to start training for something. And John, the psychological burden was too much. Every time I picked up a weight and said, okay, well, now you've really got to push, you know, there's a contest coming up, I'd freeze.
Oh, okay.
And then eventually, thank God, I ended up getting conjunctivitis and I was ill, and that was the excuse not to compete. But that year at the contest that I wanted to compete in, I went and watched, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was the guest poser.
Wow.
Along with Ken Waller.
Okay.
So I sat in that audience. And I was just so overwhelmed with everything, and it was just so exciting. I decided I'm coming back next year to win this. Now, they were pretty big words for a kid who had never competed.
Yeah.
So a year later, I spent the whole year trimming down. I was a big kid, but around 200 and something pounds.
Okay.
And there was a small show that I did before the state titles, which was what I told everybody I was going to win.
Okay.
So I did that small show, and my introduction to bodybuilding competition, John, went something like this. It was a Saturday night. I told no one what I was doing.
Okay.
A friend of mine came with me, and it was a boys' club. We all belonged to, it was called the Police Boys Club.
Okay.
So it was an inter-club competition. You know, we got the bus. They took whoever wanted to go, which was just me and my friend, and there was about 15 people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I walked backstage, one of the officials met me, and he didn't know what I looked like, and he just said to me, you know who's going to win this contest, don't you? And I just shrugged my shoulders. I didn't know what to say. He goes, Dave Smith is going to win this contest. And I said, well, all right, just go through with this. It is your first show. And Dave ended up winning. Now, fast forward 6 weeks later, I went on a really strict diet. I didn't know what I was doing. I saw an article in Muscle and Fitness, which was called the meat and water diet.
Okay.
And there's a photo of Arnold on the next page doing crossover. So I thought, well, this is how he must eat. So I'll eat this way. And I constructed my own diet, which was zero carbohydrates, which I did for about 8 weeks.
Wow.
And it got me in incredible condition. My training back then was training the whole body 3 days a week.
Okay.
The whole body workout. So on a Monday, I would train the whole body. It would take like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Same on Wednesday, same on Friday. And that's how I trained up to that first show.
Wow.
So in that show, again, I tried to tell as few people as possible on the way to the pre-judging, by the time I made it to the prejudging, I had about 50 kids from around the suburbs following me because I stopped off at a local hangout because I was early.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me, what are you doing today? And I said, oh, my God, how am I going to explain this? So I did. And then one told another. By the time I made it to the auditorium, there must have been at least 50 friends. You know, we used to hang out at this place called the Rockdale Bowling Club.
Okay.
And they followed me up there. Somehow they made it into the prejudging.
Hmm.
And that day I, you know, John, it was very difficult for me. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't eat any food that day. I think I had some honey and apple for breakfast and just spent the rest of the day doing what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Ended up winning the teenage section, which was then called the juniors, and the guy that beat me 8 weeks previously placed second. So as far as I was concerned, my job was done.
Right.
Then Paul Graham sent someone backstage saying, listen, we'd like you to go in the open division. And I said, no, I don't think I can go through with it. I've done what I needed to do. I don't want to do any of this.
Right.
And Paul Graham actually found me and he said, listen, he goes, I need you to shave underneath your arms. He goes, I need you to wear tighter posing trunks.
Okay.
And he goes, because you may do really well tonight. That's all I was told.
Okay.
The three judges were Roger Walker, Robert Nalon, and a former Mr. Australia by the name of Pat Kanenan.
Okay.
So I won the junior or teenage division. So then I went through the motions of the men's division, and I didn't realize, you know, there were some really good guys there that were already national title winners. I don't know what they were doing competing in a state title, but I guess they, you know, they just like trophies.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up winning.
Wow. Plus,
four best body parts at 17 years of age.
Jeez, unbelievable.
So that's how it all started.
What did your physique look like then, John, at 17?
Well, quite good actually, because my whole world consisted of what the guys looked like in the Weider magazines.
Yeah.
I didn't know what local bodybuilders looked like. I had no idea and I had no interest.
Yeah.
I wanted to be where Arnold was. I wanted to be a Weider wildcat.
Yeah, right.
At that age.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Weider's marketing was incredible, you know, what it would do to a child between the ages of, say, 12 to 18. It just sucks you right in. It was exactly what I wanted.
Right. What year was it that you saw Arnold and Ken Waller guest pose? What year was that?
1975.
Okay.
And Arnold was building his weight back up after he filmed Staying Hungry.
Yeah.
So when I saw him, he was certainly not in his best shape, but looked really incredible.
Yeah.
He was lighter than usual and just didn't have the – he wasn't dialed in yet. It was you know, a few weeks out before his last for Olympia in South Africa.
Okay. So what was that? What was your show then? What was your next show after that show at 17 where you won the Open?
Well, John, I needed guidance because that year everybody wanted me to do the Mr. Australia and, you know, I was on a zero carbohydrate diet.
Yeah.
And you know, I had a calendar and I crossed off every single day. It was like I was waiting to get out of jail.
Yeah, right.
So everybody was saying, look, you've got a good chance. You've only got a couple of months. All somebody needed to do was come to me and say, listen, how are you eating? I would have told them. And if somebody would have said, add a couple of potatoes and a piece of fruit, I would have been able to have carried on. But on a zero-carbohydrate diet, I'm going, if you think I'm going to do this for another 2 months, it ain't going to happen.
Right.
And which was quite bad, John, because that post-contest pig out, it almost killed me. I ate so much food, I ended up with a stretched esophagus. So my esophagus doesn't close anymore because at one stage I put so much food in my stomach that it just stretched it to the point where it no longer closes. And, you know, I've got to be careful because it causes reflux. But that happened post-contest.
Mm.
After the Mr. New South Wales.
Jesus, wow.
So I didn't compete that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then later. It's funny what happened, because that's when Arthur Jones was really big, and he was all about the one set to failure and all that sort of stuff. And the gym that I trained at was full of Arthur Jones' disciples.
Okay.
Because he actually came to Australia to pick up a large alligator from up north. A place called Cairns got huge alligators. And
okay.
I don't know if you know much about Arthur Jones. He used to have a TV show called Wild Cargo.
Right, right.
He used to capture wild animals, and I don't know if he had a zoo or what it was.
Yeah.
So he came to Australia, and people were failing pretty bad on Nautilus machines. We had a football team that was doing, you know, it was our premier football club.
Yeah.
And they were losing, and they were training on Nautilus machines. So straight away, somebody connected, and they said, well, look, it's the Nautilus machine. So Arthur Jones went out of his way to speak to all of them, do a seminar. So then everybody understood his philosophy of muscle length and training to failure and all that sort of stuff. So I started training like that, and I didn't eat enough food.
Mm-hmm.
And a year later, I entered the Mr. Australia, and I looked disappointing. And I was 18 years of age.
Yeah.
I placed second in my division. And the guy that beat me, by the name of Ivan Grealish, that guy was pretty good.
Yeah.
In actual fact, both times that I competed against Ivan, I was not at my best, and he beat me quite convincingly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've stood on stage next to people like Haney, and I've not been intimidated the way I was when I stood next to Ivan.
Oh, really? Wow.
Well, yeah, look, I've always told people that there's some incredible bodybuilders that have come up through this country that you've never seen.
Yeah.
And you'll never see them, but we had some pretty good talent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then what happened after that then? You were 18 and you only got second in that show, and then where was the next step?
Okay, well, then I discovered girls. and looking back in my career, this sort of behavior was what shortened it and possibly stopped me from going as far as possible. So I had a year off.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought, just let me, you know, concentrate on girls and having fun like other guys my age do.
Right, right.
And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this show popped up, and it was a pro-am Mr. South Pacific. And it was a few weeks out from that year's Mr. Olympia in 1979.
Okay.
And there were cash prizes, and Roger threatened to compete. So everybody started pulling out. I wasn't in shape. I was working as a training manager in a supermarket.
Okay.
And studying at the same time. And I thought, you know what? You've always wanted to stand next to a pro. Who knows if you're ever going to get a chance other than this? So I quit work. Wow. And I started training for that contest 6 weeks before it, just so I could get compared to Roger.
Yeah.
That never happened because he was a heavyweight, and I competed as a middleweight, which is now known as the light heavyweight class. But then the weights were a bit different. So I ended up getting third in the middleweight division, and I won best shape.
Okay.
The guy that won my division, believe it or not, in the overall, beat Roger, and that was Ivan.
Really? Wow.
Grealish. Yeah. Mm. So Roger won the heavyweights, but Roger was not dialed in.
Yeah.
This was still 3 weeks out from the Olympia.
Yeah.
So, you know, Roger won the heavyweight division quite easily.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to the pose down, Ivan got the overall.
Wow.
And then 3 weeks later, Roger makes the top six in the Mr. Olympia.
Yeah, I was at that contest. He looked great at that show in 79.
Well,
yeah.
he was incredible. So, you know, he just didn't quite look like that a couple of weeks beforehand.
Wow.
And, you know, Roger's somebody who I looked up to greatly. I, you know, remember I quit my job just to be able to stand on stage with him, and it never even happened. I used to sometimes visit the same gym that he was training in, which was very interesting for me to see somebody of that caliber doing what he was doing.
Right.
And, you know, by that stage, everybody knew he was a super strong person.
Yeah.
Yet yet when I saw him training, it was all slow, squeezing, supersets, very strict. And every once in a while, you'd see him doing something incredibly heavy, which, you know, like I once saw, I walked in, he was doing seated presses in a squat rack without a back support, and he had over 200 pounds on it, and he was just like doing it so slow and steady while he was seated without a back support.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God, how do you do that?
Yeah. Was Roger the guy that everybody looked up to in Australia at the time?
Roger was the man.
Yeah.
Roger was the man. He was unbeatable in this country.
Right.
He was unbeatable. Yeah. He was super strong. He was huge.
Yeah.
He was in good condition. He was the man.
Yeah. You
know? And I was the person that did it after him. He was before me.
Right. So you did a show the next year, I think, which was held with the Mr. Olympia, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
What was that like?
Well, that was the Best in Australia show. It was an invitational. And I was sick of getting beaten by certain individuals, so okay. I just had to ramp up the intensity, and I trained incredibly hard.
Yeah,
I was still a natural bodybuilder.
Okay,
and I ended up winning it, and I challenged whoever there was, the guys that had beaten me, and. It was an invitational only, so they invited the very best in the country.
Okay.
So there was a couple of Mr. Australia winners. The other guys didn't compete.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I did that show, and I won that on the same stage that Arnold won the Mr. Olympia.
Hmm.
And I know you're going to ask me some questions about that. But what I did want to add to that was that after I won that show, I actually won a trip to the IFBB Mr. Universe contest that year in Manila.
Okay.
Now, I had 6 weeks, John. In those 6 weeks, I put on so much weight in the first 2 weeks from this post-contest bad habit of overeating. I don't know how I did it. I kind of like got fat and then back into shape, but it wasn't good shape.
Right.
So I competed in the IFBB World Amateurs. And I thought I should have placed a bit higher than sixth. But, you know, looking back, your first show, IFBB World Championships, Johnny Fuller won that division. Bronston Onstead was second.
Yeah.
I thought I should have been third, but a guy by the name of K.O. Raymond.
Right, from Finland.
Was third. I forgot who was fourth. Fifth was a guy from Belgium called Erwin Note.
Yeah.
And I got sixth. I felt I should have been third. That's all. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
So
you said you were a natural at that time, huh, John?
I still was, John. And in actual fact, after that show, I sat backstage looking at everyone, and I was really dejected and upset.
Yeah.
And then I'm talking to myself, and I said, well, look, number one, you weren't in shape. You didn't look the way you did 6 weeks before.
Right.
You should be thankful that you even made it here after what you did to yourself. So I'm looking at these guys, and I'm going, there's just something about these guys that I can't put my finger on. And I'm going, like, I know I can kind of do it, but I wouldn't have enough hours in a day to get enough sleep and all the things you've got to do. I don't even know if I could recover from what I've got to do. And I've been close to that look, but I don't have it. And I'm just wondering, surely this couldn't be the anabolic steroids that everybody talks about. So that's the only information that I had just from that self-talk.
Yeah.
So I went back to Australia, and I trained naturally for about another 1.5 years, and I got as big as I could. And then I started training for the IFBB World Championships, which Moses Maldonado that year won the light heavyweight, and Lee Haney won the heavyweight.
Right, 82.
Now, I was borderline. I could have been heavy or heavy. I was borderline. Now, I was getting in really good condition, but then something happened. There was a second IFBB federation that tried to start up, and they tried to overthrow Paul Graham. Mm-hmm. So then Oscar State said, we're not having any Australians here until all this has been sorted out. Hmm. So Paul, the official that he is and was and still is, I said to him, listen, what's going on? He goes, just relax. He goes, I'll get the official sanction to bring the team over. And I said, can you guarantee me that? He goes, no, but I'll do it. So I said, look, that's not good enough, Paul. I said, there's a qualifier in 1 week for the NABBA Mr. Universe. Hmm. I'm not in shape, but I bet I'm good enough to win it. And I bet you that I can win a trip to NABBA. Now, this was at Paul's engagement party, and I waited till he had enough to drink to pull this on it. Now, remember, I'm training in his gym.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was training for the IFBB World Championships. So he kind of said, look, if you do that, he goes, I'm going to suspend you. But he goes, then because you're training from my gym and knowing you, he goes, there's a good chance that you'll win. At least I'll steal you back and publicize you and you know, I can say you're from my gym. So I got a suspension. Sure enough, when I came back to Australia, he was the only person that got me any publicity.
Hmm.
Otherwise, nobody would have known.
Yeah.
And then I served a short suspension. I did some favors for the IFBB, some guest posing exhibitions and so forth, and I was given my pro card to compete in the New York Night of Champions.
Wow, okay. Let me take you back, John, and talk a little bit about your training, because you said, you know, when you were competing in 1980 and you did really good in that invitation contest that was held at Mr. Olympia, by this time you had already been competing a few years, so I'm guessing you had your training down, you had your nutrition down. So what was your... what were you doing as far as your training and nutrition at that time?
Well, at that time, I actually remember my diet.
Okay.
I added some carbohydrates to make sure first of all, when I did the New South Wales, there were no carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Then when I did the next contest, which was the Pro-Am, it was probably what you'd call these days there's a name for the diet. You can eat whatever you want as long as your macros.
Whatever you want to eat. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it was that sort of diet. And I didn't look any good. It didn't work that well.
Yeah.
Right? My main purpose there was to stop working, live the lifestyle that people lived in Venice, and stand on stage with Roger.
Okay.
Right? That was the main thing.
Yeah.
So now, knowing more about diet, 1980, for that contest, I trained it 6 days straight.
Okay.
So that was, you know, you cover your whole body once over 3 days and
yeah,
the regular 6 days straight. Some days it was twice a day.
Okay.
And my diet back then was less protein, a little bit more carbohydrates, and about 100 liver tablets a day with lots of amino acids in between meals.
Okay. So you were 21 years old and you're all natural and you win this big Australian contest that was held with the Mr. Olympia.
Yep.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about the Olympia. I want to hear your thoughts on that because you were right there and I've always been interested in that contest because it's still to this day one of the most controversial Mr. Olympias ever. So anybody who was at that contest, I want to get their opinions of, you know, what they saw and what they thought.
Okay. Well, my training partner at that time, by the name of Billy Knight, was driving Casey the Aider around Sydney. They became friends.
Okay.
So then I was able to talk to Casey, and, you know, Casey didn't do well that year, but he was hanging around backstage, and he saw me just before I walked out. He said to me, you know what? He goes, you should really try to enjoy yourself, because he goes, once you turn pro, you're not going to know what hit you. And he said this to me just before I walked out the stage. So, the question was, what did I think of that day? So that was one of the things that happened. And then this whole thing with Arnold, to me, it was quite clear what happened. I just don't know how other people even consider that there was anybody there that could have – Arnold was way off.
Mm-hmm.
He was way – but you know what, John? He was 20% better than everybody else.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I know everybody's got their favorites and everybody would have liked to have taken Arnold down. The audience booed like I've never heard before. okay? Yet they cheered him while he was on stage, but when they gave him the trophy, then all this booing started. I couldn't work it out. Now, because of what Casey had told me and because of my plans, I knew I had better watch these guys carefully because I'm one step away from ending up where they are.
Yeah, right.
So I watched everything very carefully.
Okay.
I went to the back of the auditorium to see what it all looked like.
Wow.
Then I came to the front of the auditorium.
Huh.
Then I checked everything out from every angle until I saw exactly what was there and saw these guys backstage.
Yeah.
And I just don't know what people are looking at. I don't think there was anybody there good enough to beat Arnold. I mean, look, if you want to talk about the person that ushered in the size era, it would have been Arnold on that day.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Chris Dickerson, as incredible as what he looked, that year, if you saw Chris Dickerson just standing relaxed,
right,
it was like a masterpiece.
Right, right.
It literally looked like a masterpiece. Yet Arnold just overpowered him with those arms and the chest.
Yeah.
You know, when they stood side on, Arnold had these huge arms.
Yeah.
And wasn't so far out of condition that he couldn't do it.
Hmm. That's interesting.
You know, he was just way off from what he was normally, his normal look.
Yeah. So maybe it was just people were comparing his old condition to how he looked in 1980, and that's where the controversy came from, huh?
John, I also think it's a psychological thing. It's a pact mentality.
Yeah.
One person starts complaining and booing, and then everybody joins in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I couldn't take part in that sort of behavior because I was there focusing on what's going to happen if you get on stage with these guys in a couple of years.
Yeah.
That was my only focus. So I carefully studied everyone.
Right, right. And you said you went behind the stage because I remember that contest. They had people sitting behind the stage, right? I remember seeing pictures of that.
Well, that's how the opera house is set up.
Okay.
So you had people behind you. They were cheaper seats. And you had people in front of you. But when I'm talking about backstage, I'm talking about I was actually backstage watching what these guys were doing. I was present.
Yeah.
For the debacle between Mike Mensa and Arnold. I was standing outside the room listening.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you what it looked like to me.
Okay.
It was a doorway, and somebody was leaning on that doorway from inside the room, and I saw this huge lat sticking out of the doorway, and that was Franco leaning on the doorway, uh-huh, right?
Uh-huh.
And you know what Franco's lats are like. From behind, right. Half of his body was sticking out the doorway, and I saw this huge lat, and I'm going, who the hell is this, and what's going on in that room? What's all the shouting?
Right, right.
And suddenly I see Arnold walk out, Franco follows him, and, you know, from what I was told, there was a problem in that room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You weren't actually in the room when Mensa approached Arnold, but you were right outside it.
I was right outside the room trying to see. There was a group of people that were in front of the doorway, and I'm going, what's going on in here?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that's where I was when that happened.
What was it like backstage, John, when all those guys were pumping up and, you know, you always hear about Arnold psyching people out. What was that like?
Well, I don't think he was doing a lot of that day.
Yeah.
He was in his own room, and I think he knew he was in trouble.
Yeah.
So he was just doing the best that he could. I don't think there was much psyching out going on that day.
Okay.
I do remember asking him for his autograph backstage after the contest.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking to another person by the name of Helmut Cernik, who was also Austrian.
Yeah.
And they were talking in German or Austrian, whatever it was, and I just went up because I knew Helmut, so I could interrupt.
Yeah.
So, please, can I have your autograph? And, you know, Arnold took the piece of paper. He kept arguing with Helmut. And then I just thought, let me politely look through my bag, pretend I'm looking for something while this conversation goes on. And then all of a sudden he turns around and he goes, where is this guy? So he signed the piece of paper and I was down looking through. I got down looking through my bag. So I stood up and I go, thank you very much. And that's what went on backstage. And right. I saw all the various guys pumping up and everything.
Yeah.
And we were all there at the same time because competing in the Best in Australia contest, that was the opener.
Yeah.
So these guys, they were getting ready. I was amongst them.
Yeah, that's great.
And it was quite electric. Not only that, the gym where they all trained at, which was a gym that was just up the road from Bondi Beach where I trained, and you want to talk about hardcore? this place was hardcore, and it was just up from the beach.
Okay.
They all stayed on the beach, and they were all tanning on the beach.
Yeah.
So, that year in Sydney, that whole thing was quite entertaining, and it was one of those milestones in your life where you remember, and it was fantastic.
Right. Who impressed you backstage, John, from the guys in the Olympia?
Let's see. I would probably have to say Boyer Coe.
Okay.
You know, and it was just, I ended up in an elevator with him.
Uh-huh.
And he had his friends with him. I don't think he knew who I was. And, you know, he was being very polite and really calm. He pulled up his tracksuit pants and, you know, he was showing his friends the condition that he was in.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what, that's not bad, but I can do this.
Yeah.
You know, like, remember, I'm looking at this guy who's a legend. I've watched him.
Yeah, yeah.
I've grown up watching Boyer Coe. Now I'm in an elevator with him. Mm-hmm. He was quite impressive. Not the best body on stage, but just, I don't know, the way he carried himself, the body parts, you know, just the way he was put together and knowing and watching him, you know, other than Arnold, he was probably one of the most impressive or the most impressive. Frank Zane had a problem that year and, you know, we saw him walking around with his wife and the first thing me and a couple of my friends said was his wife's bigger than him. she was taller.
Yeah.
And she just got more room than Frank. But when he came out on stage, then the thought was, where did it all come from?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, which was what
he's known for.
That's what he's known for.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Boyer was a great poser when he did his posing routine. I saw him compete a few times at the Olympia in the late 70s. And every time he did his posing routine, God, he just came alive. You know, he was an amazing poser.
And all the signature poses that he has.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Exactly.
He's got so many signature poses that other people just cannot copy.
Yeah.
You know, right. it's great to have a bodybuilder who looks good in the compulsories.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good bodybuilders do. But then when they do that third posing round, you know, hit some shots that nobody can copy.
Yeah.
Signature shots that are completely his.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the prejudging like? Because I heard, you know, with Arnold and all the rest of the guys.
Well, the prejudging, everybody was happy. They were cheering. They were happy to see all these bodybuilders.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very good atmosphere.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Plus, there was a huge American audience, and they were all able to see me just before the Olympia.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so the prejudging was electric.
Okay.
It was the atmosphere was so thick, John, you could cut it with a knife. I've never been to any other show. And the night show was indescribable.
Yeah.
What happened at that night show was just indescribable. I've been, the last Olympia I was at was the 2009, and you couldn't even compare.
Right.
You know, 2009 was a good show.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler, but not the atmosphere that the 1980 Mr. Olympia had. It was just phenomenal.
Yeah. If you look at that lineup today, I mean, you've had, I don't think there was ever a Mr. Olympia lineup like that, where you had so many Mr. Olympia winners in the contest and guys who would win the Olympia later on, and just all those top title winners all in one lineup. It was really amazing.
It was really amazing. I don't know if people know the whole lineup, but you had Samir, who placed nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, Samir looked incredible, but he's just too heavy.
Yeah.
You had Danny Padilla.
Yeah.
Dennis Tenorino.
Mm-hmm.
The list just goes on and on. You know, Tom Platz.
Casey Vieira,
Casey Vieira, the top six, you know, and Roger being on home ground.
Yeah.
You know, the audience was on his side.
Yeah.
You know, when Roger got compared, I couldn't describe what was happening in the audience.
Right.
You know, they were all there for him.
Right. John, let's talk about that NABBA universe you did in 82. And you won the medium class in that one.
Yes. So that was what I got suspended for,
mm-hmm.
and the reason why I competed in that show was because of the dysfunction that was happening within the IFBB.
Right.
So I competed in a qualifier here in Australia, and I was not in shape, John. I was getting in good shape, but I was way off. Mm-hmm. So I took a really big chance because there were some really good bodybuilders in there, and I think I squeezed enough water out and pulled a couple of other tricks to just get me to look okay. And at that contest, I was so dehydrated, John, when they called for best body parts, I thought, if they ask for best legs, that'll be it, because as soon as I flex my legs, I'm going to cramp. You could feel it coming on.
Oh, really? Wow. But
luckily, they called for best arms first.
Uh-huh.
So did best arms and won best arms. Well, then they didn't have best legs. They had best calves and best thighs.
Okay.
So once they asked for best thighs, which I also won, I collapsed.
Really?
I cramped. I crawled backstage.
Jeez.
And one of the adjudicators came back and he goes, listen, he goes, we can't hold the contest up any further. Are you coming out or not? I said, I can't do any more body parts. I said, I'm done. Trust me. He goes, we will wait for you. And I said, no, trust me, I'm done. Are you going to disqualify me from the contest? He goes, no, you just will not take part in the rest of the body parts. Somebody else will win them. And I said, that's fine.
Yeah.
That's good enough. So that was that contest leading up to the NABBA show. So even when I competed in the NABBA show, I was not aiming for that show, John. This is all something that was done last minute.
Yeah.
Because what was happening, you know, with people trying to overthrow Paul Graham and Oscar State. So I just went to the NABBA show.
Mm-hmm.
And, John, there's a film of me accepting the trophy at that NABBA show. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, there was a controversy because they thought I was too tall for that class. But I just happened to be the tallest guy in that class. I got measured and I was in within the class limit.
Yeah.
It was that. And what happened there, some guy that was helping me with my posing, his name was Vince Basile, former Mr. Canada.
Yeah.
Robert Nalon also helped me with a lot of posing. And there were various individuals. Plus, I was pretty good at it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I had my training partner, Billy Knight, who learned a lot from Robert and helped me. So through all of that and just, you know, me competing and doing a posing routine in my first contest, I had no help from anyone. I just copied all the poses that were in Muscle and Fitness and did them on stage. That's all I did. There was no coach. There was no posing coach. There was no diet coach. There was no one. It was me, mostly in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started training at this police boys club. Sorry, the question was that you had asked.
Well, I was just wondering what it was like to do the NABBA Universe. I know me and Wayne Galash were just doing an interview about the NABBA Universe and about their history. And I know back in the earlier days, like the 50s, the 60s, and even the 70s, the NABBA Universe was really held in high prestige. And then the IFBB started coming around. So by 1982, how did you feel about going into NABBA Universe? Because it had so much history and so many great winners behind it.
Well, John, like I said, it was not my plan, but
I was
very honored.
Yeah.
I was very honored, and the lineup that was in my division was not an easy lineup. But the funny thing that happened out of everything that you might find interesting, and there's a film of me somewhere on Facebook doing this.
Mm-hmm.
This Vince Basile guy that helped me said, John, look, he goes, it's your first show. You'll probably make the top six, which made me really angry. And I go, why top six? Why can't I just win it?
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, it's your first time. Look at the caliber of the show and so forth. It just made me really angry. And I said, I can't listen to this anymore. I've got to do something. So then I end up in London and they kept advertising this show on the radio and they kept talking about Ian Dow, which made me even more angry. I'm going, geez, nobody even knows that I'm alive. Like they're talking, this guy is the favorite.
Right.
Who's going to know me? And I walk on stage. So make a long story short, I was used to placings going something like, you know, they call out sixth place, fifth, fourth, third, second, and first.
Right.
Well, for this NABBA Universe, they didn't do that.
They
called out the winner immediately.
Yeah.
So I thought walking up to collect my sixth place trophy. I kept thinking about Vince. I'm going, he's right. I got sixth place. But then I'm walking, and I've got this bad posture. Like, I'm just thinking to myself, who are the five guys that are better than me here?
Right.
And people are putting their hand out to shake it, and I'm going, oh, you shake their hand, but you got sixth place. So anyway, I walk up to the guy holding the trophy, and we start walking towards the podium. He hands me the trophy, and I've looked at it, and I've said, this is a first-place trophy. He goes, yes, that's because you've won. And honestly, I almost lost my legs.
Wow.
I thought I was getting a sixth-place trophy.
Right.
And when you look at the film, it's on Facebook. All I did was held it above my head, then I walked to the podium totally confused. I did a pose and left, and Oscar Heidenstein said, no, yeah. You've got to stand there.
Right.
You've got to. So I thought I had gotten sixth place.
That's
so
funny.
You could imagine the turnaround in emotions and everything after
realized
one.
That's hilarious. Yeah, you got Ian Dowd got second, and Vince Brown got third, and Mike Sable for the United States got fourth.
And there was Jesse Gautreaux.
Yeah, Jesse Gautreaux got sixth.
He got fifth.
Oh, he got fifth, okay.
He got fifth. I think he was that year's Mr. USA. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And sixth place went to some guy from France called George Ducal.
Yeah, so that was a good lineup because Ian Dow's a great bodybuilder. Vince Brown, I remember seeing pictures of him. He had really good shape.
Well, Mike Sable's condition at that show was phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, the only other time I've seen anybody in better condition than Mike Sable at that show was Rich Gaspari.
Wow, really?
Who I think at the 1986 World Championship set a standard for conditioning that has yet to be equaled and probably never will.
Wow, really? Those are strong words.
Well, I don't know if you've got any photos of what he looked like that year.
Yeah, I got the video, yes, and he was in phenomenal shape.
Yes.
Yeah. And then John Brown won the overall, right? He won the tall class and he won the overall.
Yes. Now, look, you know, I know a lot of things about bodybuilding that I possibly shouldn't repeat. Mm-hmm. One of the Italian judges came up to me and spoke to me in Italian before the night show, and he said, look, you're very good. You've won your division. He goes, we cannot give you the overall because we have last year's winner here. Do you understand that? And I appreciated it.
Yeah.
I appreciated it because in the IFBB, if someone does that, no one will come to you beforehand and mention anything like that. I actually appreciated that. I go, well, this is part of the sport. Remember my introduction to bodybuilding was walking backstage with one of the officials telling me he was going to win the contest.
Yeah.
So I thought this is part of it.
Right. Exactly. So then after that NAVA Universe, John, you went over to the IFBB. You were pretty much an IFBB bodybuilder at that point, after that, because then you did the that Grand Prix in Las Vegas where you got second to Lee Haney.
Well, my first pro show was the New York Night of Champions, where I was fifth.
Okay.
Lee Haney won that.
Right.
Albert Beckles got second.
Okay.
Third place was Johnny Fuller. Fourth place was Greg DeFerro. I was fifth. That was my first pro show.
So what was your experience like in that? That was your first pro IFBB show.
That's an incredible experience right there because I walked out on stage. No one had ever seen me.
Yeah.
I had copied the blue opposing trunks that Mike Mensa and Casey Viedo used to wear. I don't know if you remember. They used to wear Balua.
Yeah, I do remember that, yeah.
So I copied that, and I was wearing red Balua.
Okay.
I had this Australian tan. No one had ever seen me.
Yeah.
So what in New York is every time I got called for a comparison, I noticed I was getting booed.
Hmm.
I thought, okay, I've been told about New York audiences. you know, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. So, and to make matters worse, John, I had sinuses, my nose was blocked, and after every comparison, I kept opening up my nostrils and going, breathing in air because I needed more oxygen.
Yeah.
Once the audience started booing, they thought I was doing this to them. you stink. Right. So they booed even louder.
Yeah.
And I said, John, you better start blowing kisses at these people. So after every comparison, I was like, I kept doing that, and they kept booing. And eventually they started clapping.
Oh, wow.
By the time I made it to the night show, because they had so many acts on stage, Samir came out on a motorbike and guest posed, and there was Ken Passariello doing the thing with the coffin.
Yeah, yeah.
For Michael Jackson's Thriller. So when I've walked out to pose, I fit my first pose, and I thought the roof was going to come down, and I thought, this cannot be for you. There must be somebody behind you doing a special act. Right. I've never heard this type of audience applause, right. Which made me get my posing routine. And I've got the posing routine. Maybe other people can't tell, but I was just so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I remember standing there thinking, what do I do next? And then I picked it up and finished it. And, you know, that was an incredible experience in New York, the New York Night of Champions. It was yeah. something yeah. really special. Yeah.
What did you think of some of the other bodybuilders like Lee Haney and Albert Beckles and DeFerro?
Well, you know, these guys all looked incredible. These were guys that I used to see in magazines. Then all of a sudden, I take a plane trip and I'm standing on stage with them.
Yeah.
You know, at the pre-judging, for instance, before the pre-judging, they were photographing people. Joe Weider was there.
Yeah.
And they directed me to go there. So I just sat and watched all of this. And, you know, and somebody said, why don't you get your photo taken? No, I'm going, no, it's okay. You know, and somebody talked me into doing it. So as everybody was leaving, I disrobed and I started posing, and Joe Weider actually started directing how he wanted me to stand. But I remember Albert Beckles put his glasses on. He was standing in the background just looking.
Yeah.
Wow. Just looking.
Yeah.
And after that, I just remembered going backstage and then, you know, we got ready and there we were, the lineup at the Beacon Theatre, 1983 New York Night of Champions.
So what was the feedback like, John, after that contest, as far as the people from the magazines, the judges, et cetera?
Well, the audience turned around, and at night, I don't think there was any booing going on. There was a lot of cheering. The one thing I do remember was Artie Zeller coming up to me after that show, and Artie's words were, look, he goes, I've got to apologize on the behalf of what's happened here today. He goes, they would have been too afraid to give you first. That was his take on it.
Yeah.
Some other people made comments like, okay, this is the night where aesthetics died. And what they were referring to, possibly I was the person with the aesthetics.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the film and the lineup, I was barely 200 pounds, John. Didn't mean to come in that light.
Yeah.
And, you know, standing next to the bigger guys like Haney and the Pharaoh and, you know, all the rest of them, I think I held my own quite well, I feel, size-wise.
Yeah. So then later that year, they had the Olympia in Munich, Germany. Were you planning on going on that, or what was the reason you waited till that show in December?
Now, let's see what happened with the Olympia. That year, I'm not sure. At the end of that year, I did the Caesars Palace Grand Prix. I'm not sure why. I think maybe I just didn't qualify. I'm not sure whether the top five allowed you to compete in the Olympia. I wasn't sure, John.
Okay.
But I didn't take part in it. I wasn't asked. I wasn't sure whether I could even do it.
Yeah.
So then again, you know, when I trained for that show, it was almost last minute.
Mm-hmm.
It was not something I had planned. So I got my pro card and did it. And then, you know, I let myself go. And all of a sudden they're shooting the movie Pumping Iron for the women.
Yeah.
And Paul Graham's like, you've got to compete in that contest. I said, I'm not ready. And he goes, well, if you want to, get ready. So, again, it was something that was slapped together quite quick.
Okay.
And even though I looked okay, I guess, at that show, I don't think I was in my best shape or the shape that I could have been in, that's all.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like at that show, because it was in December, right, that one in the Caesars Grand Prix?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was part of the after the season was over, and a lot of the guys, I think McAway only got like eighth place. So a lot of the guys who were top guys were a little off, and you came in good shape, and you took second to Lee Haney.
Yes.
So that was really the show, I think, that, well, that and the Night of the Champions sort of catapulted you to the forefront, and everybody started noticing you in the magazines, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
In fact, just before that show, because of the conditions that I was living under, and I found it really hard to sleep, and I was a little out of step with that type of lifestyle.
Yeah.
Even before that show, I decided I was not going to compete in pro bodybuilding any longer. It was over.
Oh, really?
I was not going to do it. In fact, I remember while I was in the States having a telephone conversation with my mother. I thought, she's going to love to hear this. I'll call her and tell her you're never going to compete again.
Uh-huh.
She goes, well, I don't believe you, and you can do whatever you like.
Yeah.
So I said, no, I'm done. I'm not going to keep living like this. And so I've come back to Sydney. I was in a nightclub on a Saturday night, you know, just having a good time, drinking and carrying on. So we've come out onto the street, and I said to my friend, let's go to the newsstand and see if there's any bodybuilding magazines. And there was an outdoor newsstand. It was a little newsstand. It was almost like a bookshelf with a guy sitting next to it.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a magazine, and I said to my friend, look at the guy on the cover of that magazine. He looks so good. I've never seen him before. I picked up the magazine, and it was me.
Wow.
Then there was another magazine that had a story on me.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm holding these two magazines. I said, let's go to the shop up the road because they've usually got others that this guy doesn't have.
Yeah.
More stories about me. So now I'm walking back to the car with these four magazines, and I kept saying to my friend, but I told my mother I was going to retire. What do I do now?
Uh-huh.
Look at all this publicity.
Yeah. Why were you thinking about quitting, John? Was it just you were getting tired of the lifestyle?
The pressure that I was under to get ready for that show, because I only had a short period of time. What I had to do that last week in Los Angeles to get myself to the point where I thought, okay, you look okay now. You won't embarrass yourself.
Yeah.
The lack of sleep. I remember that I was sharing a room with Paul Graham. I took an Elvis Presley dose of sleeping tablets.
Wow.
If you and what that means, you know. In fact, it was the same drug that he used to take. I think it was sodium pentobarbital or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I took a couple of those tablets, and I thought, okay, well, I've got to get some sleep. I wake up 2 hours later. It was still dark outside, and I thought, well, it must be 6 a.m. at least. Wake Paul up. Let's go to the gym. So I wake him up, and he looks at his watch, and he goes, it's 30 minutes later. He goes, you did this 30 minutes ago. And I said, okay, I give up.
Wow.
Like I can't even sleep. I got up. I went to the hotel manager. I said, give me another room. He's snoring too loud. I need another room. And like right then and there, I said, I'm not going to keep living like this.
Yeah.
And that's when I decided it wasn't for me. Hmm. And even though I did compete and I did make all sorts of claims, what was really going through my mind, John, was, how do you finish this now in a manner where it's not embarrassing, you've actually achieved something, and you can do something that no one else has done?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking about it, and one day I had I was walking to a photo shoot in Los Angeles with Chris Lund.
Mm-hmm.
And he started talking about Samir and some of the other bodybuilders, and he said, look, you know, he goes, where Samir's ended up, if I was him, I would go and do another professional Mr. Universe, win that, and retire. He was talking about Samir.
Okay.
So I thought to myself, well, maybe that's what I should do.
Yeah.
And that's what I did, John.
Hmm. Okay.
So it took another 11 years for me to exit in a manner.
Yeah.
Which I thought was acceptable, not embarrassing, and have something to show for it.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
Yes.
So in 84, then, it says you did the Pro World Championships. Is that correct?
That's correct. Now, what happened there, so there was a Caesars Palace Grand Prix in 83.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Italian. I'm not used to dieting over Christmas.
Yeah, right.
Cannelloni, lasagna, pasta, all the traditional foods. We had a big family. My grandparents were still alive.
Yeah.
I found it quite difficult, and I did a lot of ridiculous things. I didn't want to be training for that show.
Yeah.
I didn't really take it as seriously as what I should have. I don't think I had the correct guidance, because even from the age of 17, as I was telling you, somebody would have just told me, add a piece of fruit and two potatoes to your diet.
Yeah.
I probably would have won that year's Mr. Australia.
Yeah.
It was very likely that it would have happened.
Okay.
So I did that show, and I was quite upset.
Yeah.
I got quite ill afterwards from food poisoning, and then it was in 1984 I didn't compete. And when I came back in 1985, it was the New York Night of Champions,
mm-hmm.
where Rich Gaspari brought the new level of conditioning in. Albert Beckles won it.
Yeah.
I again mistimed everything, and I came in. I was in very good condition, but I was very flat. And carving up, I had some bread mixed with potato that wasn't cooked properly, and played havoc with my stomach. And I was off. I looked okay, but I was way off.
Yeah. Okay. So then, 86 was a good year for you, John, because you did the Los Angeles Pro Championships, and you got sixth. But then you did the World Pro Championships, the one you were just talking about with Gaspari, reaching that level of conditioning in Columbus, Ohio, and you got fifth place there. So that was a good placing.
Well, it was a good placing, but again, John, about a month out, you know, there's a story behind why it all happened, and I'm not sure that we should be talking about those sort of things on your show.
Mm-hmm.
But 1 month out, I was really out of shape.
Okay.
And I had about a month to get ready. And I knew I was going to be off, but I just did the best that I could to qualify for the Olympia, which I did do that year.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I competed in the Olympia, and I'm not sure what happened to the Olympia, except that even though I thought I was better conditioned, I seemed to be flat, or I didn't have enough food, or there wasn't enough of something.
Yeah.
And I ended up in ninth place. I actually thought I deserved fourth, mm-hmm. where Beckles placed.
Yeah.
But I ended up in ninth place. And then a year later, there was some sort of hair and nail analysis test that they were doing back then to determine what sort of nutrients your body needs. And somebody told me I had candida, and I didn't know exactly what it was. So I said, well, I better not compete. Hmm. So that was another year wasted.
Wow.
Then I came back in 88, and I think I did the Couples Pro World Championships with Joanne McCartney.
Oh, okay.
And I think we got second or third there. Second?
Uh-huh.
Second or third. I think Tony Pearson and Carla Dunn. No, it was Donna Oliveira and Sean Jenkins that won.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I think we got second or third Couples Championships then. I kept training, and I for the next show, which was the Niagara Falls Pro Show, I didn't have it.
Okay.
I didn't have it. I was flat. John, it was my lifestyle. The things that I'm not telling you that I did in life. Let's just put it this way. When I used to see Haney, I'm going, this man's secret is that he's got a steady relationship with a woman has known his whole life.
Yeah.
I doubt it that there's any sort of problem going on there. It's very stable. And I often wondered that if I'd have had such a relationship instead of some of the relationships that I've had with some of the women that I've come across.
Yeah.
I felt that if I was living in the United States, Los Angeles, and I had a stable life,
yeah,
everything would have been different.
Okay. Let me take you back to that the Pro World Championships in 86. That had to be exciting, being in Arnold's contest and being interviewed by him. That was on ESPN television, so that had to be a great experience, right, John?
Well, it was incredible. Like, it was surreal what was going on backstage.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody was pumping up, and I went and looked for a quiet area.
Mm-hmm.
where the other guys weren't, and Arnold happened to be sitting there reading some notes, and I was on the other side of the room pumping up. I know it doesn't mean much to most people, but for me and what was going on backstage, and I think maybe even Reg Park was there, or, you know, the caliber of that contest. Again, you had Kowak, Jack Brown, Danny Padilla.
Star lineup,
Christian, Frank Richards.
Yeah.
Dak Bork, Bob Paris. Mm-hmm. Who else could you ask for? It was pretty much it was Mr. Olympia without Haney.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got interviewed by Arnold on ESPN television. Well,
you know, getting interviewed by Arnold was incredible. And I remember while the camera was off, I said to him, you're talking about symmetry, Arnold. Like, I've gained all this size, and all you can bring up is this symmetry. And I kind of caught him off guard, and, you know, it became comical. And then, you know, when the cameras were on, we just said what we had to say, and, you know, it was incredible. Plus, I ran into Arnold before. You know, he was Paul Graham's best man at the wedding.
Oh, yeah.
And I was there. So I had run into Arnold before, and you know, this was 1986, so I'd already met him a few times. I'm not sure if you remembered me.
Yeah.
But I was used to being around him and talking to him, and it was great.
Yeah, that's awesome. What'd you think of Gaspari and Christian? Because like you said, Gaspari probably set a whole new standard for bodybuilding conditioning at that show.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, whatever flaws or anybody wants to pick, but what you've got to give him is that in a lot of the poses, he was just... he looked incredible. Nobody could match him. And that condition, it didn't matter what angle he stood from.
Yeah.
Whether it was a good angle for him or not. Just that level of conditioning made everything look outstanding.
Yeah.
You know, my Christian placed second, but there was a huge gap between Gaspari and Mike Christian.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's amazing is Gaspari was only... Gaspari was only 22 years old at that show. It's just amazing. I think that was probably the best shape he ever achieved in his whole life.
I agree with that. He's always in good condition, but I don't think he ever got that look again. The crispness, the sharpness.
I agree.
You could see everything under the skin.
Yeah.
It was just dry, full.
Yeah, he was full. He was thick, too. Thick, big and thick. Yeah.
Yeah. Quite incredible.
Yeah, amazing. So you did the first Arnold Classic, too, right, John, in 1989?
Yes. Now, that Arnold Classic there, that was a bit of a problem. I had suffered a really bad elbow injury.
Oh, okay.
And so I had an elbow that didn't lock out, and it happened in the gym. So I'm not sure if anybody could put their head where my one would be, a fairly young pro with everything in front of him all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You know, I had an accident beforehand. I didn't realize that my hand was actually broken.
Wow.
I went into the gym and I started doing regular bench presses with a regular warm-up weight, except this time the warm-up weight was so heavy I couldn't hold it. Hmm. I hadn't trained for about 6 or 8 weeks, and it was traveling downwards towards me. I couldn't control it, so I did whatever I could to stop it.
Yeah.
And all it was a sound in my elbow, and it was gone. It was no more lockout. It only... would stop 3/4 of the way.
Right.
So all the competitions that I did after that were with this crook, you know, bad elbow.
Hmm.
And I've had 11 surgeries on it, John, and holy after God. 29 years of surgery, I can now lock it out.
Jesus, wow.
The hand doesn't rotate all the way like the left hand does, but at least it now straightens.
Wow, after, that's amazing.
After 29 years of... time and 11 surgeries. That the last surgery that I had, I got a really bad infection and almost died.
Jeez.
But at least I'm here now and I can lock my elbow out.
Wow. Was it a tendon, John, or what was it?
No, it was a bone spur.
Oh.
And when a bone spur breaks off and it gets into the mechanism of the elbow, it interrupts the whole mechanism and the mechanics of the elbow, which means then you start to develop more spurs. And more problems, and the bone just keeps growing, and
wow.
you know, what it would take is for somebody to go in there and do such a thorough clean out that there is no more malfunction. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen in medical science, but they're now doing elbow replacements where they do a carbon copy of your good elbow and put it on the side. That's already been done in China.
Wow.
Now, one day I may think about getting that done, but at the moment, I can function, I can train, and my arms are growing again.
Okay. So, wow. Wow, I didn't know you went through all that. I never heard of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so looking at your contest history, it says you did the IFAB Australian Championships in 1991. You got second in the tall class.
That's not correct. I'm not sure who put that up. And this is why I'm so, you know, when people search the internet,
yeah,
for information, I just can't take anyone serious. You know, I got into an argument with my son about how tall I was because of what he read on the internet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I never entered that contest. I'm not sure where it came from. I may have even been judging it or sitting in the audience, but I certainly didn't compete.
Right, right. Yeah, I was wondering why you would go to the Australian Championships after you're already an IFBB pro.
Yeah, so that's just something that somebody put up. No idea where it came from.
Okay. But you did do the Ironman Pro in 82, right? Or I'm sorry, 92,
yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just came in far too heavy, holding water, and didn't look any good.
Yeah, okay. And then 93, you did go back to the NABBA Universe in 93, and you did the Pro, and you got second?
Earlier that year, I did the Ironman again.
Yeah.
But John, I was so depleted for that Ironman contest. Even Samir competed in it. And then I discussed it with Samir afterwards. And what we realized was when you were close up, you could see through my skin. I was in very good condition, but I was so flat where the judges were sitting, I appeared flat.
Okay.
So, you know, Samir backstage, I'm helping him pump up. He's right in front of me, he can see what was there, and he's going, "You got this incredible condition. How did you do it?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, look, however incredible it is, no one out there is seeing it." And we discussed it after the show. I ran into him in a coffee shop, and basically the synopsis was that I was probably a few Pop-Tarts away from looking my best, because that night after the show, I gained 17 pounds and did a photo shoot with Paula Crane the next day, and it was a completely different body, John.
Jesus. Wow.
17 pounds overnight. It started with cheesecake drink, didn't go to sleep, could not sleep, and I just laid around until the morning, and 17 pounds. And John, I'm telling you, the next day it was a different body.
I'll bet. Jeez.
It makes me wonder if I'd have done that for the pre-judging,
where
I would have ended up in that Ironman contest. So then after that, I thought, you know, one of the problems that I'm having, you know, with the IFBB was once you drop out of the top six, you don't have preferential treatment anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember, you know, being here in Australia, and I was just opening up my first gym, and I get a call 5 a.m. in the morning from Wayne D'Amelio. He goes, you know, all the contracts you've signed, he goes, you can't compete in those shows. I need you to compete in this, this, and this. And I said, Wayne, I can't do that. I said, I'm opening up a gym. You know, I've gotten married. I can't do those shows. So, again, I was forced into doing something where I could not really give 100%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was not me at my best. So after doing the Ironman, I just said, look, you know, Chris Lund had that talk with me about, you know, he felt that Samir should have been doing the Pro Universe and would have been a good way to end his career.
Yeah.
So on the way to the photo shoot, I thought, you know, you might want to consider that yourself. The good thing about the NABBA Universe is it's held once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Know the exact date,
mm-hmm.
and nobody can move it on you. So all the IFBB was ever used to seeing was me putting together something really quick and ending up on stage at about 2:05, 2:10.
Yeah.
That's all they were used to seeing. Sometimes I was flat, sometimes I looked okay.
Yeah.
But at Other Universe, because I knew I could spend a whole year concentrating and doing what I needed to do.
Yeah.
I ended up weighing 230.
Wow.
200, right?
Yeah.
And at just over 2% body fat.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That's the IFBB. Never ever saw it. I was never like that on an IFBB stage because you can compete here, but you can't compete here. Oh, we'll never let you do this. Quickly get in shape.
Yeah.
I had a whole year to prepare for that.
Hmm. Wow.
Which I was never capable of doing within the IFBB.
Hmm. Wow. So you had to be happy with your condition at that show.
Well, look, I really was because I did it the year before. And like you said, I placed second the year before, and it was inside the same auditorium. And you know, I went inside one of the toilet cubicles because it had a really good light. Mm-hmm. I pulled my pants down the year before, and I'm looking at my thighs, and I'm going, you know what? You look really dry. Everything's there, but it's just not coming out. It's almost like it's either flat, you're flat, or something's missing.
Yeah.
But just go out on stage and do your best. Now, 12 months later, I'm like 25 pounds heavier.
Jeez.
inside the same toilet cubicle. I've pulled my pants down. This time I had deep grooves in my thighs,
yeah,
covered veins, and I just said to myself, you know what, you can't do any more.
Yeah.
If anybody's going to beat you today, they're going to have to be very, very good.
Yeah.
And look, even there, the way the judging went, I thought, you're not going to win this. You can clearly see they're not the comparisons, the way they're going. Well, I didn't know that they have already decided to give me first, mm-hmm, and they were just bring everyone else.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I thought, no. And standing in a pre-judging, I've even got a photo of me standing in the lineup with my hand scratching the back of my neck thinking, you know what, just make this your last one.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you place. Just have a really good time doing your posing routine tonight.
Yeah.
Just give it. Give it up.
Yeah.
and it just so happened that night that I ended up winning.
Wow. So yeah. What did you do with your training, John, from when you got second to Kowak? You got Eduardo Kowak was the guy who won in 93, correct?
Yeah.
So what did you do with your training and your diet to gain like 25 pounds?
Okay, well, what I first did is I took my training to 6 days a week again.
Okay.
Practically overtraining. And I was on a diet to lose body fat. And I wanted to get as lean as possible. So then once I had gotten as lean as I possibly could, mm-hmm, then I actually gained weight coming into the contest, which was different.
Oh, okay.
To what I ever did. So then my training changed from 6 days a week high volume, more or less, to the way Doreen was training, which I then took it to 4 days a week, you know, 1 to 2 hard sets per exercise,
mm-hmm,
2 to 4 exercises per body part, cardio. The diet was 50% protein, 50% carbohydrates.
Okay.
And that's how I did it. I don't know if that sort of training got me in my best shape or, you know, I could have done something different, but it worked that year.
Yeah. How about how many weeks out from the contest were you really lean, where you could change your training then?
I was well, it would have been maybe 12 weeks out. So in 6 weeks, I went from about, in about 6 weeks,
okay,
is where all the gains were made because I was dry, I was lean, just trying to bring the skin in as thin as possible.
Yeah.
So I probably weighed again 205. So then 6 weeks later, I was 235.
Wow.
This is a month.
That's
was a month out. So then I spent the last month just squeezing and, you know, seeing what I could do. Okay, now you're spilling over, go back.
Yeah, yeah.
And in fact, I was so careful. that I actually spoke to two close people, and I said to them, you're going to get a telephone call from me 3 days out of the contest. Mm-hmm. And when I call you, it'll only be about A, B, or C. If it is A, this is the advice you give me, because I'm not going to be in my right mind. And it was a close friend of mine and my wife. So I tried my wife first. Uh-huh. And, you know, I called her from London, and I thought, look, can you just help me? Because I actually gave you some instructions 6 weeks ago. And she kind of remembered, but she had other problems. And I just quickly said, well, thank you very much. I'll call you back after the contest. I really appreciate that. So then I called my male friend, and he goes, John, this is what you told me to tell you, but this is what I feel you should do. And I said, no problem, I'll do that. Hmm. And, you know, John, I don't know what happens to you a couple of days out, but that's usually when most people blow it.
Yeah, that's when they all blow it, right? Because like you said, you're not in your right mind, you know?
Well, you're not in your right mind. You're certainly not.
Yeah.
So that's how that one went, John.
So what'd you weigh at the show then, John? 230?
230.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing. I'd like to see some pictures of you from that. You gotta look unbelievable.
Yeah, look, there may be one or two on Facebook, but I'll see whatever I can find and see if I can get it to you.
Yeah. So, John, looking back over your whole career, what were some of the highlights? You know, because I think everybody's got, whether it's the amateur show they went in or professional, they've got the highlights, you know, the one contest that really stood out or a couple memories that were really special.
It had to be my second contest, mm-hmm. the junior Mr. New South Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was 17. I doubt anyone's ever going to break that record.
Yeah.
I would like to see a 17-year-old walk in and take the overall men's state title.
Yeah.
I'd really like to see that.
Yeah.
And that was the sweetest victory of all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. When I talked to Dorian, I asked him the same question, and he said it was a show he did, I think it was in 1985, where that was the contest that sort of brought him out on the scene. And they invited him to go to the World Games. I was surprised with having won 6 Mr. Olympia titles. That was the one that really stood out, you know?
Yeah. So that's a common thing, I think. There's that special little show that meant that much to you. And, the universe was okay. Mm-hmm. Honestly, by that time, I was over it. I was just so relieved to have been able to, you know, and honored to have been able to have done that. It was incredible.
Yeah.
But I was over it, and I'd had enough of bodybuilding, but not bodybuilding, competitive bodybuilding and everything that went with it.
Yeah.
Plus, I saw what was starting to happen. And I thought, you know what, I could make these sort of gains again. I'm pretty sure I could do it. But, John, I couldn't do any more beautiful poses. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do the artistic poses. It was starting to fill in all the gaps of my body.
Yeah.
And I started looking like a ball of meat.
Mm, yeah.
You know, women were actually, I got to remember I had my my oldest son in a pram on Bondi Beach, and his mother was in a chocolate shop, and, you know, she was taking quite a long time, so I decided to go around the corner and see what was going on. And going around the corner, and I've nearly run into these two women. Mm-hmm. I'm holding the pram, and I've got a tight t-shirt on, which was see-through. This was a month out from the universe. Mm-hmm. And they've just stood there, and they've gone, yuck. and I stood there thinking, yuck is good. This probably means you look freaky and you're going to win.
Right, right.
That's the best compliment.
Right.
And then I went off, you know. And look, I could have kept gaining size, John, and I just didn't want to end up with what's out there today, because that's when it all started.
Right, right. Yeah, well, you were competing during the golden years, you know, when aesthetics and proportions and that kind of thing was paramount in the judge's mind, you know.
Sure. I mean, back then, I remember Wayne D'Amelio got me 3 guest posing gigs. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in my house or in my apartment in New York practicing my posing. And with a periphery of my eyes, as I'm standing and kneeling and doing poses, I could see that my stomach was poking out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, cancel it. You're not going to walk on stage. I mean, you wouldn't even consider it.
Yeah.
Walking on stage with a belly. It just wasn't done.
Right.
You didn't discuss it with anyone, but it was just something that you wouldn't even dare do.
Right.
So I pulled out of 3 posing exhibitions because I thought, you're going to walk on stage with a belly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I thought to myself, can't you suck it in? Going, well, probably not. Just don't do it.
Right, right.
It wasn't that bad compared to what's out there today.
I know.
It was just the standard that we had back then,
right.
And that's what we went for.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about how it was back then, everybody had the small waist. That was the ideal, and everybody believed in that. And all the top bodybuilders had that look.
All the top bodybuilders had that look, and I actually remember at a Mr. Los Angeles contest in the early 80s, there was a guy that weighed about 275 pounds, huge, huge African-American man. He pretty much looked like, I forgot his name, but he placed nowhere.
Yeah.
He looked like today's bodybuilders, and he just wasn't taken seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
He placed nowhere. They discussed it.
Yeah.
And, it was just a different look.
Yeah.
You were never going to play someone like that ahead of a Zane.
Yeah, yeah. Different standards.
Yeah.
So what are you doing now, John, out in Australia?
Well, at the moment, I'm doing personal training.
Okay.
To make a living. Looking at a couple of other little projects on the side to see what I could do for the future. Mm-hmm. In the past, I've been a gym owner. And that's all. That I've also had that on mind. And
okay.
So at the moment, I'm just doing personal training and living that way.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen some of your posts on Facebook with some of your clients.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just getting my website updated, johnferrelli.com.
Okay.
Hopefully, there'll be a few good things on there soon.
Okay. What are the good gyms out there in Australia? Because my nephew, he's in college. He's going to Purdue University. But he's going on a semester abroad, where he's going to study abroad. So he'll be out in Sydney, Australia in February. And he's just getting into lifting. So I thought I'd find out, what good gyms he could go to out there.
Well, the gyms have changed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that there's... I think there are a couple of hardcore gyms, but they're out of the way.
Okay.
And I think maybe the full circle's been done now where maybe they should be bought back.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the things that you're not allowed to do in gyms, and I couldn't recommend anywhere, John.
Okay, okay.
So I've got a friend of mine out of Sydney at a place called Campbelltown, and it's called the Olympus Gym.
Okay.
It would, if he's coming to Sydney, that would probably be a little bit out of the way, but that's probably one of the last
hardcore gyms,
places where you could find exactly what you need, where you need it.
Yeah. Okay.
People have even moved away from the regular set system of weight training, which originally, was developed for rehabilitation and strengthening the body. And they're doing a lot of dangerous moves, which are classified as functional. There's nothing functional about them.
Right.
That's, now you're walking to gyms and people don't even care.
Yeah.
They're not even aware that they can look better. They're all about, let's exercise and do functional stuff.
Right, right.
And whether you want to gain muscle, whether you want to get ripped, whatever it is, most personal trainers will promise you that they can do it, and all they'll give you.
Yeah.
It is exercises that are ineffective and, they're supposed to be functional or according to them, they're functional. So that's what goes on in most gyms. And that's great just to get a person moving.
Yeah.
But I think nothing beats the traditional set system of training.
Yeah, I agree.
John, if there's anything I can do for you, please feel free to ask. You're a person that I look up to. I love American bodybuilding. I'm actually not comfortable about this Kuwait thing and everybody saying that they're going out there. I'm not comfortable with it at all. I don't even know why.
Uh-huh.
The other day I saw the movie, Generation Iron number two.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brendan Curry saying that's the place to go and all that. Yeah, for me, the USA will always be the bodybuilding capital of the world.
Right.
I couldn't imagine it any other way. And I love the United States, and I'm always looking for an excuse to travel there and possibly even move there.
Yeah.
In actual, one of the business models that I'm looking at is I've got a friend of mine called Butch Neves, who's friends with Bob Gruskin. I think he was an AAU Mr. America and competed in the universe. And Butch has got a – Butch went from being a gym owner to a personal trainer to now having this place called Fit Body Boot Camp.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a United States franchise, and I'm thinking, do I do this in Australia? Do I come back to the United States?
Yeah.
Because, John, you know, last time I was in Los Angeles, I'm walking towards Gold's Gym, and I'm like two blocks away from the actual gym. It's an industrial area.
Yeah.
And the guy from across the road starts waving and yelling at me. He goes, I remember you from New York. And I'm going, you know, This is another country. Look what you're getting.
Yeah.
In Australia, you could be two blocks away from your own gym and nobody knows who the hell you are or even cares.
Right.
So to me, you know, Los Angeles, the United States, the way I grew up with all the USA bodybuilding magazines, I just can't thank you enough, and I appreciate you considering me for this.
Absolutely. This.
I consider it a great honor, and I hope people get entertained. And like I said, if there's any more or anything that I can do for you, please feel free to ask.
All right, John. Well, I really appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk to you again.
Thank you, John. You take care.
All right. You too, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. All right.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we are talking about the NABBA Mr. Universe. Next week, we will be joined by John Brown, where he will talk about his illustrious career competing in the Mr. Universe contest, all the people he met in the sport, and also what he did to coach three of the greatest bodybuilders that we've ever seen, Sean Ray, Vince Taylor, and Melvin Anthony. And also, as I mentioned, be sure to check out Real Sports on HBO this month, where John will be on there talking about his three sons who are all being considered for the NFL draft. That is it for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Redcon One, Old School Labs, and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode. And join us next week for another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. You guys take care.